Good morning, Delaware. I hope you're having a great April so far. It's amazing that we're already into the second full quarter of 2021. It's just, where is the time going, Nicole?
I don't have anything witty. I was ready for anything except where's the time going? I don't know. I'm feeling very morose today. You'll get that when I do my book talk.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. I'm sorry to hear that.
No, it's because of the book.
Well, that's what I figured. Yeah. So you read a morose book?
I did. Ooh. I read a dark book.
Okay. Our guest today.
Well, that was dark.
Yeah. Jeez. I may step out for a cigarette while you're out. And I quit smoking 30 years ago. So. Anyway, our guest today is Robbie Apt, who is the manager of our outreach and family and outreach services, also known as our bookmobile department. Good morning, Robbie. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm well. How's everybody else?
Well, one of us is morose, yeah. The other one's just feeling like the original April Fool here. So tell us about this book that made you so morose.
It's a brand new book, hot off the presses, by one of our favorite young adult authors, Mindy McGinnis.
Ah, yes, Mindy.
She comes and visits us all the time. We have had a lovely relationship with Mindy McGinnis because she is rather local for a very long time. She loves libraries and librarians, and this one is her brand new one called The Initial Insult. And what we know about it is it's the first in a duology. So she likes to write books that are kind of just partner books, part one, part two. And The Initial Insult, where it gets a lot of its inspiration from is Edgar Allan Poe. Ah. So if you're familiar with Poe and his short stories, they are obviously very dark, very morose. And this one is specifically influenced by The Cask of Amontillado.
Ah, yes.
Or Amontillado. Tiado, yes. That. if you know that Poe story, then when I tell you the synopsis of The Initial Insult, it will make a lot of sense where they come from. The story centers in Amontillado, Ohio, which I would like to ask Mindy if that's how we would pronounce it if it were a real city within
Ohio. You mean like Belle Fountain?
Like Belle Fountain, yeah. Like Lima, like Toledo. Mm-hmm. Yes, all of these lovely places that we mispronounce so terribly. So The Initial Insult takes place in Amontillado, Ohio, and it's a town where there are, you know, five kind of family names, and everybody knows everybody else's business. They know who married up. They know who has old money. They know who has new money. And they know, everybody knows too much about each other. There are two girls, and they are best friends in elementary school. One of the girls is having a sleepover at the other girl's house one night. And she decides in the middle of the night that she doesn't feel well. She needs to go home. And so while the parents, the one girl, the friend, she stays at home in her bed and the parents drive the friend home. There's an accident and the parents vanish. The cars vanish. And the friend is, you know, kind of just wet in her nightgown on the side of a river, but has no memory of what's happened. And that's where their friendship starts to split. Their names are Tress and Felicity. Felicity goes, life goes well for her after the accident. She's beautiful. She's popular. She's got the money. She's got the family, all of these things. And life just kind of stays peachy keen for her. Tress, on the other hand, has lost both of her parents. And she goes to live with her grandfather, but he's not really an adoring or a doting grandfather. He has what we would have been familiar with if you watched The Tiger King last year when that came out in 2020. It's a kind of podunk side of the road, quote unquote, zoo. He has an ape, he has a tiger, he has a crocodile and a zebra and an emu. You know, it's nothing really too special. So Tress goes to live with him and life isn't really that great with him. Their friendship splits. They really can't ever repair it after that point. We know both of them are hiding secrets, and it all comes to a head whenever they are at the final party in a house that's going to be torn down the next day, their senior year. Tress says to her friend that she has a drug deal for her that's going to be happening in the basement. The friend meets her in the basement, and Tress actually is setting her up for maybe her demise in a brick by brick layer.
Ooh.
So she sets her up in a corner of this basement of this house that's going to be demolished the next day. And Tress is convinced that if she can scare her enough, if she can lay brick by brick with her trowel and her mortar and everything that she needs, that friend will tell her the secrets about the night that her parents disappeared before she makes her way to the top.
Wow.
This book is phenomenal.
It sounds like the kind of book you start reading about 9 o'clock at night, and at 4 o'clock in the morning you realize, oh my God, I didn't sleep at all last night.
I read this book. I don't read books quickly, and I read this book in 3 days, in 3 sittings. I gave about an hour to the first sitting and about 2 hours to the next 2 sittings. I read it in 5 hours. It's so fast. The ending is like, what? It's really amazing. If you like, this is dark. It's a dark, dark story. You've got, a little bit of unreliable narrator. You've got some gothic fiction. You've got the tie to Edgar Allan Poe. It's thriller. It's suspenseful. There's multiple perspectives. It switches back and forth between Tress and Felicity. The other fun thing is one of the animals in the zoo is a character as well. And they speak in a prose that is haunting. So it's called The Initial Insult by Mindy McGinnis. Sneak preview. We might be speaking to Mindy next week. We might not be speaking to her next week. We might be speaking to our teen librarian, Shannon, but she has a visit coming up at the end of this month. You're going to want to hop on our events page and sign up for that because it's free and virtual.
Sounds great. So, Robbie, what have you been reading?
So, I like to read historical fiction. My most recent book was a story called Arctic Fury by Greer McAllister.
Mm-hmm.
It's set in the 1850s, so go all the way back to that point, and start out with some men who go to seek out the Arctic, take a ship, go to the Arctic, and never come back. So the captain's wife decides to hire not men to go find her husband, but women.
Interesting.
So she goes to find a lady named Virginia Reeve, who is an adventurer. So she contacts her first. And then Reeve goes and finds other people to go with her. She goes, for instance, to town to a map maker. And the map maker's daughter has maps of the Arctic and keeps track of who travels and where locations are. She gets her to go with her. She has 12 other women that go on this trek to the Arctic with her. So it's all an adventure. Every step of it is an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that sounds really good.
It is very good. It has some twists. It has a murder trial. It has things that happen to you in the Arctic, like you go hungry, you freeze. It's a lot of up and downs.
That sounds great.
It does sound great. What it's title really again good. Is, what's it called?
Arctic Fury.
The Arctic Fury.
Sounds
by
great.
Greer McAllister.
Well, the book I read has a little of both of what you've talked about.
Great.
This is actually the third book in a series, and it also is set in the 1800s, but this one is set during the Civil War. I've read Martha Hall Kelly's new book, which is called, I haven't actually finished it. I have to admit it. I'm about a third of the way through it. It's called Sunflower Sisters. It's set during the Civil War, and it's the third book in the Woolsey Faraday series that Martha Hall Kelly is writing. First one was called Lilac Girls. It was set during World War II in New York, Germany, and Poland. And then book two was called Lost Roses in 2019. That was set during World War I, again in New York and in pre-revolution Russia. This one is the story of three women told from each of their points of view in alternating chapters. The first woman is Georgie Woolsey, who is a wealthy one of 7 or 8 daughters of a woman in New York who is an abolitionist. When the war comes about, Georgie and one of her sisters decide to follow their passion for nursing and become nurses on a hospital ship for the Union. And she's, of course, this is very rare, and women are, it's not really very frequently on the battlefield or involved in this. So she becomes very involved, not only in abolitionism, but in seeing what the Civil War was really all about from the ground up. Second character is Anna Mae Watson, who is, she runs the Peeler Plantation, which is actually in Maryland, which is a border state that stayed in the Union, but they have a number of enslaved people on that on that plantation. Her husband joins the Union Army, and her brother, whom she dearly loves, which she doesn't quite so much her husband, signs up with the Confederates. And she's in charge of the household, so she uses every opportunity she can to follow her own ambition, but she gets drawn into a network of spies, and it's kind of interesting how that all comes about. And then the third person is Gemma, who is one of the enslaved people on Anna May's plantations.
Hmm.
And this is the most problematic part of the book. It's very strange hearing a white author writing about an African-American character, even though it's during the slave period. It's kind of interesting. I think she's doing a good job. I don't have the historical basis to know for sure, but they're all very fully drawn characters. I would say Anna May and her overseer, LeBaron, are a little on the cliched style. You almost expect LeBaron to twirl his mustache, that kind of thing.
Right.
But overall, I'd say the characters are very well drawn, and the feel for the period is excellent. I mean, Martha Hall Kelly has obviously done amazing research to get this done right. And she talks about the various battles that the male characters, who are mostly off stage during this, are involved in. And also kind of the feel for what it was like to be an enslaved person or to be an entitled person on these plantations at the time. Also just kind of the feel for the stench and the evil of the Civil War. It was a mechanized war fought with medieval people. It was just a bloodbath. And that comes across really strongly in this novel. So as I said, this is about a family, and Kelly is working backwards through the genealogy of this family. The woman who is the Georgie Woolsey is the great-great-grandmother of one of the characters, or the great-grandmother of one of the characters from Lilac Girls that's set during World War II.
Oh, neat.
So it works back through the family that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying this, but one of the reasons I read this, because I don't read a lot of Civil War fiction, I don't read a lot of historical fiction, and I rarely read 500-page novels. But Martha Hall Kelly is going to be one of the two authors who's going to be speaking for the Friends of the Library on April 29th.
That's right.
On a Zoom call. She and another author, Jane, whose last name has just escaped
me. You caught me too fast.
It's on your bookmark, I believe.
Kate, nope, that's Mindy McGinnis.
Oh, okay.
On my bookmark.
No, anyway.
Isn't it Kate Quinn?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, Kat Quinn and Martha Hall Kelly, yes.
Right, are going to be speaking for the Friends of the Library. They're going to be interviewing each other. I'll be fielding the questions from you as audience members. Tickets are available at Everbright, and we want to thank the Friends of the Library for sponsoring that. So we're going to take a break here. We'll be back to talk to Robbie about a new collection of materials that we've put together at the library to help people with dementia and people who are caring for people with dementia. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Off the Shelf. That's Gage Tellis working the board for us. Woo. We've got Nicole Fowles here, and on the phone we have Robbie Apt from the Outreach Services Department of the Library. Robbie, during the break you were telling us something about a Civil War tie-in of your own.
I was. My maiden name is Curry, and I have lots of people who are in the Civil War. The statue of Colonel Curry is in Plain City in New California, near Plain City. And one of my family members, William Curry, wrote a book about the Civil War. It's called 4 Years in the Saddle. And it really journals his history throughout the Civil War, all the battles that he was in. It does some camp life. He gets letters from some of the colonels and captains during the time period, and they write chapters in the book. So it's very interesting. It goes through the whole Civil War.
Wow.
That's great.
That's really interesting. It's always more interesting to have a personal connection
right.
like that. So
yeah.
It is, because it would be pretty slow if you didn't, actually.
Yeah. All right. Now, before I forget, let's get to the memory cares.
Hey-o.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, that was bad. Anyway, so you, to set a little background, Outreach Services does a lot of work with groups like All Our Friends and with other organizations in town that help people who have dementia and people who are caregivers. So tell us what you're doing here with this new collection.
So this collection started by one of our staff members asking me about titles or something that would help one of her family members. She's dealing with someone with dementia.
Mm.
So I started making recommendations to her. And then she said to me, "What do you think about starting a collection at the library?" And I said, "Of course, that sounds like a good idea."
Why not?
I don't know the numbers, but there are an immense amount of people with dementia and Alzheimer's in our area. We deal with the Alzheimer's Day Out group. I have somebody in my department who actually does programs for them once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So it's based on a lot of research and a lot of actual contact with people with dementia.
So
I geared that towards people from the start of dementia, when you learn that you have dementia.
Hmm.
And then all the way through the end of the spectrum, where you're really have no idea who someone is and how to deal with that and how to still make contact with them, not really with them, but with their brain, so they recognize you, to bring them back through stories.
Yeah, Robbie, I think one of the things that, you know, we talk about when we talk about a library collection is it's really more than just books, what we have kind of put together that people can check out for free and use with their loved ones, or even if it's within like a kind of a group setting or things like that. We have, you know, things like memory cards and games and even some things that work on fine motor skills like painting. So talk a little bit about some of those maybe non-traditional library items that we've got as things that can be checked out as part of this collection.
So those non-traditional items were based on dexterity issues that dementia patients might have.
Mm.
I keep saying contacting. I'm not sure how to word that, but to try to reach their brain and their memories more. So I recommended to one of the staff members, conversation cards. That's something that is included in our collection. They're cards that are interactive, so you could use them one-on-one, or you could use them with an entire family with one dementia patient. So you're asking them to reminisce about something or storytell about something in their lives. That's one thing.
Yeah.
Excuse me. We have two sets of conversation cards about different eras and different time periods.
Yeah, I was taking a look at some of those, and one is, you know, even just a picture. It's a picture of something as simple as an apple. And, you know, it's not to assume that the person doesn't know what an apple is, but it's, what do you remember about apples? Have you ever picked apples from an apple orchard? Did you ever have a family member who made apple pie? When did you eat it? You know, what do you have a memory of a crisp, just taking a bite of a crisp apple? And that kind of thing. So this picture, this card that just simply has an apple on it, then has these lists of questions on the back that, you're right, is going to be fun for more than just the individual who needs some of those neurons stimulated, but the whole family.
Mm-hmm. And I know.
Right. So if I were just talking to my mom, she does not have dementia, but I would find out more about her life and what she did and what her grandma was about.
It's a great way to make those connections that you don't often think about. And it's those little things like an apple, a car, a picture of a tree that spark those memories that can sometimes touch a place that hasn't been touched in a while. I see that too with some of the when I've gone to programs that your staff has done with music, that a song will spark something in somebody. Somebody who hasn't been reactive at all will suddenly get up and start moving to the music and smiling or singing, even singing along when they haven't been able to do anything else. I was just reading an article about Tony Bennett, who is currently suffering from dementia himself. But when he's been rehearsing as if he's going to do a concert, never misses a word in a song.
Wow.
Never misses his cues, knows the stuff because it's in some part of his brain that has nothing to do with the part that's being affected by the dementia.
Hmm.
It's a fascinating and terrible disease.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you see these being used in somebody's home or in a I don't want to say a clinical setting, but say in a care setting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. That's a better word.
Yeah, I thought of these for individuals. For you yourself, who was dealing with dementia personally with your own body, there's some books in that collection that would help you with that. Then I went to the family, and using some of those, you could use those conversation cards with your family members, but also there are watercolor cards that you could use with someone at the lower end of the spectrum. And just paint with water. If you're painting a butterfly, talk about butterflies. What's their favorite butterfly? If you're painting a cat, ask them what was their favorite cat, a story about their cat. mm-hmm. to try to bring back some memories. But then you could also use them if you were an activities director at a nursing home
mm-hmm.
with several people in that group. There's some trivia cards in there that would work great for that.
That's great.
That sounds like fun. Yeah.
It does. Yeah. It sounds like a good way to help, again, stimulate those neurons and give you at least a little respite from it.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine, too, that for caregivers, for family members, just having this kind of material helps people feel a little less helpless
mm-hmm.
because this is it's such an unforgiving disease that being able to take at least a little control has got to be meaningful for the people who are around the person, the grandkids, the kids, mm-hmm. the siblings, the spouse. It's got to be good for them, too. So you found material. You mentioned that you'd found material for them as well. What kinds of books do they and other materials do you have that help those folks?
We have like a caregiver's guide mm-hmm. to Alzheimer's, to an action plan.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're dealing with somebody with dementia and you're not sure how to go about caring for them, it'll walk you through mm-hmm. the process a little better so you have an idea of where you're headed and where you're going. There are several books. There's a lady who wrote a story about her mom and the process with her mom and what she went through. So I tried to deal with different people in different situations.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be very useful. So I really appreciate you doing this. And I whoever your staff member was who came up with this idea, make sure that we thank her or him too, because this is just a great idea. And this idea of kind of a very targeted collection like this is a really nice idea. So mm-hmm. thank you for doing the work on that, Robbie.
We love doing it. And there were several of us that worked together to get us to this point. And hopefully our patrons love this collection.
And it's going to be available at all of the locations, I believe. There are materials from this collection available at all four of our libraries. So you don't have to go to the bookmobile to get it. You can get it at any of our locations.
Yeah,
so.
And we'll have a dedicated post right on the homepage of our webpage to get it started that'll take you a link right to that collection. So it's real easy to find. Thanks to everyone in our library who has the skills to put that together.
So thank you again, Robbie. We've got a couple of things coming up at the library over the next week or so that we wanted to make sure we touch base on. One that's close to my heart is Maker Studio 101 that's mm-hmm. coming up on Tuesday night at 6 o'clock. This is a virtual tour of the library's makerspace. It'll be done virtually over Zoom, so you need to register so that we can get you the link and everything. But Kellen Freeman, who is our Maker Studio maven, will lead you through this. It gives you some idea of the kind of equipment we have, including the 3D printers, the vinyl cutter, the laser cutter and engraver, the sewing machines, and all that sort of thing. So it'll give you an overview of each of the tools and what kind of creations you can make there.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Well, one that's going to be really exciting for your school-age kids, probably grades 1 through 5, if they love Minecraft, if you heard the word Minecraft and your ears perked up and you know someone, you should register them for this program. It's called Minecraft Mania. It's on Thursday, April 8th at 6:30 p.m. It's going to be a 90-minute program, and it's really going to be super interactive, one of a kind. It's going to be like a gaming experience, except the participants will actually be guided through some Minecraft challenges, and they'll get to work interactively in this experience with a really great company that does these all the time. So register for this event. Spaces are limited. I think there are about 20 left at this recording. And Minecraft Mania, Thursday, April 8th at 6:30.
I know that my grandson was huge on Minecraft to mm-hmm. play well, because for a while I couldn't get out into my own computer because Jake was playing Minecraft every time he came to our house.
Gabe? Same here. I did the same thing when I was little. I will admit that. I was a huge Minecraft fan, and I still love that game to this day.
That's
sign
amazing.
Me up.
That's great. Hey, I want to say before we run out of time here, Friends of the Library have a spring flower sale going with our friends at Forkmeyer & Sons. You can find more information about that at the Friends Facebook page. You can find a link there to order all different kinds of spring flowers. This is a joint fundraiser with the Delaware County Historical Society, because you will actually pick up your flowers on May 17th. At the barn at Stratford. And mm-hmm. if you did our Christmas sale when we did the poinsettias and the other plants. Hey, and I found out my Whoville tree is still alive.
Oh, goodness. I need to put mine in the ground. It's finally warm enough. So we'll see if I didn't kill them completely. Good for you.
Yes. So the Friends are going to have this. You do need to order ahead of time, because they're going to provide just as many as actually get ordered. So get your orders in early. My wife just ordered some beautiful coleus for our yard. So I'm sure you'll find something you like. It's both. And if you live in an apartment and you mm-hmm. don't have room to plant, they also have hanging baskets and things like that available.
So and some good shade-loving trees.
This is a great fundraiser for the Friends, and since we're not doing book sales and things right now, they need all the help they can get. So mm-hmm. please take advantage of this. And of course, the folks at Fort Myers do beautiful plants.
So yes, they do.
You can't go wrong with that. So we are going to sign off here for the week, but we appreciate you listening. We appreciate the Friends Library. Thank you, Gage.
Yeah, thank you.
And Robbie, thanks for all the great work that you do, not only with the bookmobile, but with things like the memory cares and homebound services and helping homeschoolers and teachers and everybody else. We really do appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Nicole, as a pleasure as always, and we will see you in the stacks.
Have a happy Easter.